WGN Radio, Elise Glink joins us on Mondays to talk about a variety of things, including the markets and real estate and your money. Hey, Elise, how are you doing today?
Things are good, John. Enjoying this beautiful weather. You?
Yeah. It's kind of been hit and miss, right? Saturday, super hot. Sunday, very nice. Today, very nice. Warm weather's still coming.
Yeah. Just like to not have some rain for a couple of days. Let that all dry up, right?
You know, our news click was the hot weather. I love it. I like it. I don't like it. I hate it. I was somewhere between I love it and I like it. Steve hated it. Where are you on this, on the really hot days, the 94s?
It's a little too warm for me. I prefer a little chillier than a little warmer, and I certainly don't like the driving through 8 inches of water, standing water on my street. So,
yeah, you got it worse than I did then. It's been dry at my place.
Yeah, no, it's fine now, but the other night when we were coming home from downtown, boy, that was some rainstorm.
Yeah, right. I was driving down I-80 the other day, the last few days, and it'd be one of those things where it's kind of cloudy, cloudy, and then all of a sudden, it's raining so hard I can't see,
right.
and then I drove out of it. Let's talk a little bit about another survey or a bit of research. In your newsletter, you talked about Gen Z may be worse off than millennials who lived through the Great Recession. This is a Washington Post story, actually. What are you reading? What are you talking about?
Well, what's interesting to me here is that for a long time, we heard that millennials had it the toughest. After the Great Recession, which was back in, 08, 09, 2010, millennials had a hard time who were graduating then. They were coming out into the workforce. There were no jobs for a really long time. In fact, we were having those jobless recoveries from 2001 all the way up, and then we hit the Great Recession, and then, it all started again. And so for a long time, people were saying millennials were the worst off generation. Well, now Gen Z, which everybody has been thinking, but they're saving and they've got, really low unemployment rates and coming out and they're jumping into jobs with better salaries. However, it turns out that the data is showing rising prices, higher housing costs for renting and owning, larger student loan balances, more credit card debt, and all of that together mean that Gen Z, which are, kids who are aged 12 to 27 right now, considered to be Gen Z, they're really having a tough go of it.
Millennials are then 28 to 43, and then after that you have the baby boomers, I guess, right? Am I missing one there?
Yeah, no, that's you're missing Gen X. Gen X. They're right after millennials. So Gen X is 43 to 59. They are the eldest of the Gen X's are getting right close to that 60-year-old level.
At the risk of sounding like a boomer, well, here comes a boomer. If you are 12, if you are even as old as 27, and you've got student loans, you haven't been able to buy a house, rents are high, there's inflation, I'm sorry, but you've got maybe 45 years to fix it. So maybe that doesn't seem as pressing to me as it would be to somebody who's 27 and is trying to get started. I presume that things will turn around in time. But I will also give you this, Elise, probably it is true that getting started is more difficult for them than it was for me, right?
I think it is a little bit tougher, John. When you and I both got started in our careers, we didn't make much, right?
Nope.
I mean, media is hardly known for being well-paying.
Nope.
However, it was also, my first one-bedroom apartment cost me $600 a month. It's a lot more than that today. And vehicle insurance in some parts of the country has gone up as much as 300%. Housing is way up. In fact, the median price of a 699 square, I just looked this up for a story, actually. The median apartment size today is just about 700 square feet. The average rent is $1,500 plus a month, and it's increasing at a rate of about 7% per year. And so, it's really hard to keep up with that when your salary is increasing only, say, at 4% per year.
Yeah, right. It does seem as though we have eclipsed inflation with wage growth, but they're neck and neck. And I guess the point is that given the inflation run-up that we've had right now, even though inflation seems to be relatively tame, it's leveled off, you still have that's still the now cost of living. It's still difficult for somebody just breaking into any job market.
Yeah, it is. And if you wanted to buy a house, boy, the average age now is about 35 for buying your first home. And you and I both know, and I've looked at the data behind this, the younger you are when you buy your first home, the wealthier you're going to be later in life. And so my concern for people is that they're losing almost a decade home ownership and growth.
Let's talk a little bit about interesting scholarships for people going to school. What did you find there, Elise?
Well, you know, it's interesting. The cost of going to the University of Pennsylvania this year was $92,000 all in. $92,000. But for some really big colleges like Harvard or Yale or North Carolina State even, having the right name, John, gets you in the door for free, all tuition free. So, for example, about maybe 100 years ago, a guy named Gatling, G-A-T-L-I-N-G, set up a scholarship that everybody with his name, Gatling or Gatlin, no G at the end, could go to North Carolina State for free. If you can get in, there's no tuition. Loyola University in Chicago, somebody named Zolp, Z-O-L-P, said that if you've got that name and you're a Roman Catholic, you can go to the Loyola University Chicago for free.
Wow.
Isn't that amazing?
It's crazy. I guess you can spend your money any way you want. It seems, on the one hand, exclusionary, but I suppose they're hoping that this is members of their family tree extended. Is that the idea?
I think it is. They wanted to make sure that there were funds available for anybody who might possibly be related to them or to someone in that family. And there are different scholarships like this set up all over. So, for example, at Harvard, they will offer a full scholarship to a prospective student who's a descendant of Thomas Dudley, governor of the Massachusetts Bay Colony in the, wait for it, 1600s.
Wow.
Right? There's also one called the Charles Downer Scholarship Fund for people with the last name of Downer, D-O-W-N-E-R, or who are descendants of Joseph or Robert Downer of Wiltshire, England, or if they're descendants of the members of the Harvard class of 1889.
But I suppose these people must also realize that some people by coincidence will have the same name and not be related to them, and they're going to get a free ride, too.
Yeah, I think so. But, you know, back then, they probably, I don't know, if you're in the 1600s, you may or may not have imagined how this might filter down, or maybe you just had a vision that anybody who had that name must be somehow related to you or, you know, somebody in your family, and that would be okay also.
Talk to me a little bit about climate change and insurance.
Yeah, last week I was at the National Association of Real Estate Editors annual convention, and the kickoff conference title was all about climate change in real estate. And the guy who spoke to us is the chief economist of CoreLogic. CoreLogic is a real estate data company. And what he was talking about, John, was fascinating and terrifying all at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
All right? So what CoreLogic has done is they are aggregating data from hundreds of different sources, as varied as satellite technology from NASA, all that data that's looking all over the world, weather data. They're looking at listing data. So when you list your home for sale, all of that data has come into their stock, and not just on single family houses, but also, you know, condos and co-ops and townhouses and all the rest. And they aggregate all of this. And so they've discovered how to assign a cost for climate change to each specific house. And they do it using advanced AI, you know, artificial intelligence that feeds off of all of this aggregated data. And so they might say that my house, you know, oh, you live in the suburbs, but you're, you know, not in a floodplain. You don't have any, you know, brush around your house that might catch on fire in a forest fire. We're going to assign you a climate change cost of X. And then they sell that data to insurance companies who can then make real-time decisions about how much I should actually pay for homeowners insurance.
So it's not like you're using more fossil fuels and contributing to climate change, but as the climate changes, maybe your house is more in peril than mine, in other words.
Exactly. So homes, you know, last year FEMA redid all the flood maps in the U.S., and so a lot of homes that were in maybe 1,000-year floodplains, meaning that maybe you'd have a catastrophic storm every 1,000 years, have been reclassified to maybe having a catastrophic storm every 50 or 100 years. That's a big change. And so what CoreLogic is doing is they and the insurance companies are rolling out programs to identify key improvements that homeowners can make that could reduce their homeowners insurance premiums. So if you're around Florida, for example, or on the eastern seaboard, you border water, you're in Houston, for example, and you're much more likely to flood because you're on sea level, you may have a higher cost. But if you take, you know, steps 1, 2, 3, and 4, that would hold down your premiums, supposedly, or even reduce them.
How does the Chicago area or Midwest do? I presume, I know we're susceptible to heat and tornadoes, but are we in a pretty good space here?
Some are and some aren't. So, for example, the floodplain issue is a real issue for some parts of the Chicago metropolitan area.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
You know, when you have storms like over the weekend and maybe 4 or 5 inches of rain comes down in an hour and a half, that's, you know,
that
that's
was you,
a lot
huh?
of water.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but I mean, is it that specific? So, like, because I we started this conversation, am I saying we didn't get a lot of rain? You did. I wonder if their maps know that, and you're going to pay a higher insurance premium than I am. That's the upshot, right?
I think it is. I think they do look at claims, and they, you know, I'll give California the what they gave was an example for California. So, California has been beset by wildfires over the last few years. Even with all the rain they're getting, still having wildfires. There's one out there now. With the satellite data, they can see whether individual houses have trees and brush around them or they've been cleared out. They know whether the roof has been replaced or not. They know if other wildfire-reducing techniques have been taken into account in the area, such as having goats come and munch on the, you know, munch on the land.
Yeah.
And so they know these things, and then they can say, okay, your house, you know, is +5, so, you know, take these, clear the brush off, put on a non-flame retardant roof or whatever it is, and, you know, we won't raise your homeowner's insurance this year. And I think that that's where the industry is going. They're trying to find ways to hold down the catastrophic claims that are going on right now because of climate change.
Which we all pay for. Elise Glink is the owner of Think Glink Media and Best Money Moves. You can always click on thinkglink.com. Let's talk next Monday, Elise.
You sounds good, John.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. Mondays, we often also visit with Jim Dahlke, who has a new title now, Director of Communications at TechNexus Venture Collaborative. TechNexus.com is the website. We talked a little bit about this new opportunity for you, Jim. Give me the one-sentence umbrella description of what TechNexus does for those who didn't hear it last time.
Hey, John. Yeah, thanks for having me. Yeah, TechNexus is all about investing in startups and connecting those startups to leading corporations and helping make better connections and leading to better insights and better business. So, TechNexus is all about connecting corporations and startups and investing in those companies.
And is this Chicago-based?
That's right. Yeah, TechNexus is right in the heart of downtown Chicago and has been in the city for many years.
And one last question. Where does the money come from? Whose money are we talking about?
Yeah, that's right. So TechNexus partners with leading corporations. So these businesses are working with TechNexus. So the funds are coming from corporations who then invest in startups through joint vehicles. And so we're able to back, you know, over 150 startups across Chicago and nationally have been invested through these corporations.
So American Express buys the dinner reservation service Tock. Would that be an example of what we're talking about?
So this is an acquisition. So right now, this story in Chicago, really interesting. So Tock is a longtime Chicago startup success story. This is a startup led by Nick Kokonis, the famed restaurateur here in Chicago, and Brian Fitzpatrick, a former Googler. They launched Tock really as a way to kind of reinvent the way you reserve a restaurant. So rather than the open table method where maybe, you know, you sign up for a bunch of different reservations for dinner one night and only go to one and you end up having no shows at several, Talk takes a payment up front. So you prepay for your restaurant reservation. This drastically cuts down no shows, as you would expect, right? If you're putting up some cash, you're not going to sprinkle that around at a dozen different places hoping to score a restaurant. You're going to really kind of hone in on one. So this cuts down no shows for restaurants, which is a big deal in the restaurant industry. They gained a lot of traction in Chicago, and several years ago were acquired by Squarespace for about $400 million. They're changing hands. So Squarespace has sold Talk to American Express for about that same amount, about $400 million. So a new owner here for Talk. And, you know, it makes sense. American Express has a lot of, you know, credit card perks and, you know, kind of a lot of restaurants are a big piece in what they're doing in their card membership categories. And so Talk is now going to fit into a piece of what American Express is doing.
$400 million for that service, for that company?
You wouldn't believe the impact that, you know, a no-show creates on a restaurant. And, you know, being able to kind of provide this service is proved really to be instrumental for restaurants as they looked to cut out that sort of really nagging pain point for them. And it really gives restaurants a lot of data on their customers and just gives them more insights into the folks who are visiting them. But, yeah, it's a really simple tool that proved to become very effective for restaurants.
One last thing about that, and then we'll move on. But, I mean, what if I can't use it? Can I sell that reservation, or can I get my money back?
Yeah, so, I mean, I think if you do anything early enough in advance, you can certainly get your money back. And then there may be an opportunity to kind of use that reservation, to, you know, rebook that reservation down the road. But, yeah, basically, you know, if you kind of no-call, no-show, you're on the hook for that prepay.
Well, then I guess you do show up. Let's talk about Nurse Capital. What's this business?
Yeah, really interesting new little fund in Chicago. Nurse Capital has raised $1 million to invest in nurses who are entrepreneurs. Essentially, they've raised $1 million to invest in nurses who are launching new businesses. They really feel like nurses are on the front line of our healthcare space, and you know, are coming up with really interesting, important ideas to, you know, better patient care or medical devices. And you know, they often don't have necessarily the avenues or access to, you know, get capital the way you know, other folks in the healthcare space do. So this fund is looking specifically to get money in the hands of nurses who are looking to turn, you know, their ideas into real businesses. And so, yeah, it's a really interesting approach because you can imagine that, you know, nurses have this level of insight kind of across the healthcare space that, you know, so many others in there don't really have. And so they really think that getting, you know, some early seed capital into the hands of nurses is going to be a great way to kind of grow their business.
Yeah, I suppose they do have a lot of good ideas just since they're on the ground. But have a good idea is one thing. I don't know how many of them are entrepreneurs. And then those who are entrepreneurial then need to find the capital. That's where this comes in, huh?
Yeah, and Nurse Capital said that they, you know, found that a lot of nurses who were trying to start their own businesses were really, you know, kind of turning towards, you know, bootstrapping their business, or maybe they were crowdsourcing it, or kind of going from pitch competition to pitch competition, but really kind of struggled to kind of find that some, you know, a place to get some mature capital when a business is really ready to get going. And so Nurse Capital feels like it's fitting a need for folks who are really ready to kind of bring their idea to life.
Tell me about Level X's tech and the relationship with SpaceX.
Yeah, so the next SpaceX mission is going to have some technology from a Chicago startup Level X on board. Next month, SpaceX is doing its Polaris Dawn mission. And on board, it's going to have technology from Level X that allows astronauts to do ultrasounds in space. So they've created a device, a little handheld device that allows astronauts to really easily do an ultrasound while they're up there on the ship in space. They're going to be testing out this technology. Of course, SpaceX's long-term mission is to go to Mars, and to go to Mars, you're going to be in space for a very, very long period of time, and the health of the astronauts is a big piece of that. And so what Level X is doing is providing some easy-to-use ultrasound technology that hopefully you know, these astronauts can use with no training, no medical background. And, you know, one thing they're going to be able to do is kind of check the blood flow in the jugular vein. So it's kind of one specific area that Level X's technology is focused around for these ultrasounds. So, hey, pretty cool that, you know, some local Chicago startup technology is going to be on the latest SpaceX mission and really providing a really necessary healthcare need.
Yeah, obviously ultrasound is used for more than just checking on the baby, huh?
Yeah, that's right. And so, you know, really kind of getting insights into that health of the astronauts is super important. And monitoring blood flow, of course, is really a top priority. And so they really believe that they've kind of innovated here and are going to really be able to provide a needed piece of healthcare technology for these guys.
Yeah, really interesting. As always, that's Jim Dahlke. Jim, thanks for your time today.
Thanks, John.
Jim Dahlke is the Director of Communications for TechNexus Venture Collaborative. More business news now on the Wintrust Business Lunch with Steve Grzanich.
Hackers are demanding tens of millions of dollars in ransom from Hoffman Estates-based CDK Global. The company provides software to thousands of car dealerships in North America, and operations have been snarled since the cyber attack was reported earlier this month. A report says CDK plans to pay the ransom to hackers who are believed to be located in Eastern Europe. The company says a return to normalcy could take a while. Dealerships have been using pen and paper for some operations in finance, insurance, and other areas. CDK has been bringing systems back online slowly. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
And here's the business of food with Steve Alexander.
Yeah, thank you, and let's begin with this.
We strongly believe that every kid needs 3 meals a day to grow up healthy, happy, and strong, and that's where our work comes in.
And that is where you come in. I'll tell you how you can get a belly full of food from Chicago's best chefs and help feed children. After, I thank the Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com for sponsoring us today. There's never been a better time to put a Silverado in your toolbox. Okay, let's think about this.
Right now, 13 million kids in America live with hunger. That's 1 in 5 kids.
And there's something you can do to help and fill up on food from more than 50 of Chicago's best chefs. It's called Taste of the Nation for the No Kid Hungry campaign.
The event is at Rockwell on the River up in Avondale, just north of Logan Square.
Andy Villabona is with Share Our Strength, which is putting on the event.
This will be the second time that we host the event there. Couldn't pick up better place to find 50 plus of Chicago's best chefs and mixologists. So you get a chance to be face to face with some amazing talent.
Along with food and drink and entertainment, there will be games like the one where you can buy a key and try to unlock a door.
Whoever is the lucky person that unlocks that door is going to take home over $2,000 worth of wine that we've curated. It's an instant wine cellar.
It's all happening Thursday afternoon.
One ticket, one price to get into the event and have access to it all.
He says tickets are going fast.
We'll probably sell out come Wednesday morning.
You can buy tickets online right now.
NoKidHungry.org/Chicago is where you can find the information on the event and also buy tickets. Our campaign supports programs like school breakfast, summer meals. We invest in local efforts to feed kids and advocate for the policies to strengthen the nutrition programs and to help families put food on the table.
Some of the biggest names in Chicago cuisine.
Joe Flam and Diana Davila are co-chairing the event. Jeannie Kwan and Tim Flores from Kasama will be there. Brian Jupiter.
And too many more to mention.
It really is a who's who of the chefs in Chicago.
NoKidHungry.org/Chicago is where you can buy tickets. NoKidHungry.org/Chicago. From the business of sugar, it's National Pralines Day. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the business of food and good on 720 WGN.
Wintrust Business Lunch. We've got time to visit with Anthony Tiratilli. Tony Tiratilli is the president of development at Lind Living. We're talking about build to rent, which is not a brand new concept, but novel in this area. Tony, welcome to WGN. How are you?
I'm well. Thanks for having me.
So BTR, what does that mean?
BTR, that stands for build to rent. And you know, what does build to rent mean? Build to rent communities are single family subdivisions, for lack of a better description, that are designed specifically for renters in mind.
And how is that different than, I mean, I can already rent a house, so what's novel about homes that are built specifically for rental purposes?
Right. That's a good question, John. So scattered sites, single family homes have been around forever, make up a huge component of an overall rental product in the United States. Build to rent came about is really taking a little bit different approach in the sense that you have the continuity of use and renter type, right? So you have a subdivision that's full of renters, and what we do with it is we actually put a spin on it where we're multifamily developers for the most part at Lind. We build large-scale communities around the country. And we've taken some of that and you put it into a subdivision in the sense that it's got the amenities and it's amenitized in a way that's similar to what you see in large-scale multifamily. So, for instance, you would have a clubhouse and you'd have the pool and you have other activities, and they're all professionally managed. It's probably to get to your, you know, maybe the biggest difference, too, from some of the scattered site. Is you have on-site management and leasing. So it functions just like a regular multifamily apartment building, but it is exclusively designed for rental.
Huh. Sounds like a Dale Webb community for younger people.
And very similar, right? And then every developer operator has their spin on, you know, we're Lynn Living, right? And what does that entail? Is we like to think that, you know, to try to build a better mousetrap, so to speak, but... You know, the programming of a community and how you operate it, it matters, you know, in creating that true sense of community and how homeowners interact. And, you know, we have a tendency as people to sometimes, you know, get isolated. And, you know, we try our best to provide the programming that allows friendships to develop in meaningful ways. And we do that a couple different ways.
So there's one of these communities in southwest area of Chicago, in Oswego, if I'm not mistaken. They've also been popular in the Sun Belt. I wonder, though, based on your experience, when people own a home, they have a mortgage, they have an investment, they are inclined to take better care of it. If you're a renter, it's not your property. So I wonder what the... place looks like, if you will, after renters move into an area?
Sure. We get that question a lot. And we go into, you mentioned one of our projects. We do have a great project. It's called The Home at Ashcroft. It's a 178-unit single-family development in Oswego, Illinois. And, you know, that's part of the professional management is that we don't allow individual renters to take care of their homes. So that's one of the benefits, too, to living there is that you have no maintenance. So we operate it like it would be any other apartment community. We take care of the lawns. We take care of the exteriors. Everything's 100% maintained professionally by our operating company. And so we manage it in that capacity. So you have continuity of use and you don't have any, you know, bad actors or anything like that, right? So you keep the community together.
I'm not building up any equity in the process, though. Who are the clients? How long do they stay?
Yeah, that's a great question, right? And, you know, the home ownership, you know, we see two primary markets in BTRs around the country, you know, almost universally. You have the younger couple that's either getting married and planning a family or has a family and hasn't been able to get that first home yet to buy. So that's kind of a launching pad or stepping stone to a single family. And then you also have, and we have a lot of this actually out in our Oswego project, is you have a lot of empty nesters that have already had their homes, have done all of that, have the maintenance, and they've had all of the costs and headaches of home ownership. And maybe had the luxury of the equity that you mentioned, and they want to do something different. They like the maintenance-free living. They like the ability. You know, we have a lot of property technology in our communities. You know, where you can lock and go and still have access provided to your home. So they like the maintenance-free part of it. We even do, you know, internal plant watering, John. I mean, we'll do it all. Right?
I'd like you to come to my house, and I'm not even renting. So that's, and I'm going to guess that the market would be good for that, considering that home ownership is stalled with higher interest rates and rents tend to be high everywhere. So how's business been for you all then?
Yeah, we've been very busy. We're very happy with we're in 14 different states, and our projects in and around the Chicagoland suburbs are doing among the best, actually, ironically, in the country. And, you know, so we're big fans of the Chicago suburbs, and we're doing very well. Our project out in Oswego, actually, is we have very little standing inventory. We're building it as fast as we can, and we've been knock on wood successful out there. But to your point about affordability, sure. I mean, interest rates, and it's no secret, right? Everyone's the single family markets are essentially locked up. You have people that are sitting on mortgages that are so advantageous compared to where rates are today that they're it's difficult to move, and then it's also difficult. Affordability is a huge issue.
Well, what do rents go for in your properties?
Our property, we have rents that start at $2,600 is where we start, and that's for a three-bedroom home with two baths, and they go up to about $3,800, and that's, again, a three-bedroom, two-and-a-half. That one would have we have basements out there. The unique parts of what we do is we try to find communities that feel as much like a single-family as possible. These are townhomes, John. And we like to call those attached single families nowadays. But essentially we have, a lot of our units have full basements, which people have loved. And we didn't know exactly how that would, you don't really get that in the rental world a lot. But that's been very well received. They like the fact that they have backyards. They like this even more when we have a fence around it, so they can let their pets out. If they can pull into a two-car driveway that's got a two-car garage and have all the luxuries of single family, it feels very much like a single family. It's slightly, you're basically slightly above what your three-bedroom apartments would be, is where the BTR community really kind of fits in.
Plus, they water your plants. Tony Tiratilli is the president of development at Lind Living. That's LYND, Lind Living, and the website is lyndlind.com. Continued success, Tony. We're out of time today, but really interesting business model. I'm glad you were able to join us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Appreciate it. Anytime.